John Donne talked about the interdependent web of all existence long before we did. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. Whether we know it or not, believe it or not, Donne tells us, we are connected one to the other, all of us. A few hundred years later, in the 20th century, Starhawk speaks of a practical, intentional form of this interconnection when she says, community means strength that joins our strength to do the work that needs to be done, arms to hold us when we falter, a circle of healing, a circle of friends, someplace where we can be free. Donne's interconnectedness points us towards something greater than ourselves, a oneness that is associated with spirituality and religion and nature and consciousness. Starhawk reminds us that we can live toward that oneness, that we long for it, and that it will nourish our souls. She reminds us that living whole, living as authentic human beings, the same on the inside as the outside, is greatly aided by the embrace of community. Reflect on our songs today that we've heard so far. Thank you, you guys. And on what David reminded us. He said, caring and being cared for. One can't exist without the other. Everybody hurts. My knee hurts. Everybody hurts, the song reminds us. And how true that is. REM tells us to open our hearts, to take comfort, for we are not alone. And Jewel sings of giving, of how our hands do the work of the oneness that John Donne so famously spoke of. My hands are small, but they're my own, and they're God's hands. Quaker writer Parker Palmer joins Donne and Starhawk and David and me in affirming that community is necessary for souls. He says, we cannot embrace the challenge all alone, at least not for long. We need trustworthy relationships, tenacious communities of support, if we are to sustain the journey. And further, he says, a strong community helps people develop a sense of true self, for only in community can the self exercise and fulfill its nature, giving and taking, listening and speaking, being and doing. I strongly recommend the book that I got this from. If you get a copy of the sermon, there's a bibliography at the end. This is a great book, and we who are planning the Quest spiritual program are reading it right now. It's fabulous. We know that humans long for people who will listen to our passions, whose eyes will light up when we enter the room. People to whom we can reach out our little hands. There's a problem with all of this, though. We yearn for an accepting, challenging place where we can be ourselves to be and grow and learn. And that yearning runs counter to deep cultural practices and attitudes. We Americans basically took in the ideal of extreme individualism with our mother's milk. Alexis de Tocqueville was a 30-year-old French nobleman who in 1830 wrote a brilliant analysis of the United States entitled Democracy in America. And here's what he says. Democratic communities not only contain a large number of independent citizens, but are constantly filled with men who, having entered but yesterday on their independent condition, are intoxicated with new power. They entertain a presumptuous confidence in their own strength, and as they do not suppose that they can henceforward ever have occasion to claim the assistance of their fellow creatures, they do not scruple to show that they care for nobody but themselves. It's in our DNA. Now, Unitarian Universalists, we who have further freed ourselves from the fetters of dogma, we may embody this American ethos in a large way. David says, "We UUs are an independent lot, and most of us find difficult to ask for or accept help." That is so true. We are a people who frequently utter a certain sentence when invited to become a member of something like a church, for instance. We don't say, "Thanks for the offer to become a deeper part of your admirable community, but I'm not in a place right now to join you." No, we stand up straight and proudly label ourselves in a way that would not surprise de Tocqueville. "No, I'm not a joiner." My point this morning, I'm seeing people who recognize themselves, it is not personal. My point this morning is threefold. One, community is a necessary, fulfilling part of our soul's lives. Two, community is not all that easy to create and maintain. And three, with intention and humility, we can be independent individuals and deep community members at the same time. I called this sermon Forming, Storming, Norming, Performing, Transforming, after Bruce Tuckman's organizational work, although he didn't put on transforming, really. And I did that in order to lift up my second point, that community is neither simple nor easy. When we are creating and nurturing a large, open community like a church, but any large, open community, all the stages are going on at once. People are forming, entering tentatively, looking to authority, hoping for a place. At various times and in various subgroups and once in a while community-wide, storming can be going on like crazy. A mainline religious magazine, Christian Century, declared, "Sometimes church life is more like an episode of the Jerry Springer Show than Leave It to Beaver." Fortunately, not so very often. Norming and performing are always going on no matter what else is, all the time and at all levels. Lots of people are clear about responsibilities and embrace them joyfully. They make decisions widely, wisely, and inclusively. Disagreements are dealt with constructively and kindly. People look out for each other. In a church, worship and education and care and administration all get done, hopefully, efficiently and peacefully. But whatever else is happening, they are always getting done. That you can see that community is not monolithic, and stage theory gives us only the lightest of guidance in the complex world of church. Truth to tell, we are a motley crew of folks who differ in an incredible number of ways. We hold a whole bunch of varying beliefs. There are huge differences at any given time in what we need and what we have to give. Some of us have hearts full of accepting compassion, and some of us dwell in suspicion and cynicism. We are both the loyal workers in the vineyard and the not joiners who are unable to join or enter wholeheartedly, at least for now. And when you add to my list the fact that some of us are downright contentious, I come close to convincing myself that Unitarian Universalists really can't do community. Have you heard about why arguing with a UU is like wrestling with a pig? You just get covered with mud and the pig likes it. And here's where transformation comes in. Against what look like insurmountable odds, community does happen. With our compassionate intention, our active participation, our openness to the holy that embodies as faith and hope and love. Sometimes we find ourselves surprised, unexpectedly in the middle of that circle of healing, that circle of friends where we feel ourselves free. And sometimes we have to work hard to stay in the loving, demanding embrace of community. As I talk about times now where the human divine connection has happened, I'm asking you to listen with openness. Think of someone you love as dearly as you know how to love. Someone you love with clear eyes, smiling heart, matter-of-fact acceptance of all that they are, joy that they have a place in your life. Bring this wondrous gift to our reflections on the power of community. I'm thinking now about the many memorial services that we have dwelt in these past 25 years. If you are new or you haven't attended one of these services, think about a touching group farewell that has happened in your life. Someone is gone from us. Someone who was like a certainty of refuge. Perhaps someone without malice, who shone a gentle light on our struggles and who loved us in spite of them. Each and every one of us feels a loss. The breath of our own mortality wafts among us. The affection and regard and human feelings we had for the beloved deceased, private and public, come back to us. Without any kind of strenuous or not authentic efforts at connecting, we are connected in mortality, in love, in gratitude, in forgiveness, in grief, and in hope. Without losing any of our unique selves, we feel part of something that is larger than we are. We feel the power of community. And we get John Donne's words. And then there are the more mundane times that require our active part. 2 years ago, some of our fellowship's leadership was in disarray, much out of community with each other, in spite of trying and hoping to be otherwise. The minister's personal life was in crisis, a private and isolated fact for much of the year. Other leaders had huge stressors in their lives like illness, financial woes, job horriblenesses. The annual giving drive had fallen very short the year before, and the staff was working with an 8% pay cut. Tempers flared. The occasional vicious attack was launched. Numerous of us withdrew from the playing field where we should have been working toward reconciliation. This breaking of community has been healed, and ties are stronger than ever. the protagonists in the 2010 Community Withered Year are back in relationship with energy and affection, with renewed vision that we are, in fact, in something that is larger than we are. But this healing didn't happen spontaneously, as the community sense happens sometimes in memorials and weddings and children's events. This happened because of a miracle and because of good people keeping at it when it was hard. Actually, that's kind of a miracle too. Because of some individuals willing to set aside parts of their own agendas for the good of a cherished whole, others willing to midwife a new birth. The miracle was Joe Douglas' bequest, allowing us to pay off the mortgage on the acre to the east. East. Freeing up $20,000 a year for the operating budget. Joe's was one of those memorials that I mentioned, the very one I was thinking of when I wrote. And her love for us redeemed a very difficult situation. Good people keeping at it. The Committee on Ministry stepped in and intervened in a church group where mean behavior was being countenanced, and everyone learned from that brave and difficult evening. The minister chose to reveal her troubles, thus easing worries and opening her stubborn door to receiving love and concern. A wise woman with a great heart invited three of us, principals in the general crankiness and ungenerosity, to have a pedicure together, complete with champagne and martinellis, and we had a great time. Conversations happened, and estranged folks realized that they really do love each other. Generosity of spirit began to be felt in and between and among the previously tightened hearts of board and minister. There had been much storming, open and underground. It was affection, persistence, loyalty, and a touch of humility that transformed us. Do you still have your loved one in your heart? Perhaps the person has been displaced a little by my tale of church woes. If so, bring them back. The kind of love I described when I asked you to think of this beloved someone is a key to being part of genuine community. We can't expect it in pure form, of course, directed at several hundred other people. But we can find the seed of openness in our love, and we can hold to it in larger times and places. De Tocqueville was right. We Americans are proud individualists, often filled with the hubris of being certain that we don't need each other. But Dunn had it even more right a couple of centuries earlier when he told us that when one of us dies, we are all diminished. When he told us that we are not islands. Our seed of loving openness may get us closer to understanding what Dunn was saying. We know this belonging when we have the great good fortune to belong to a genuine community where our full selves are accepted, molded, loved, challenged, and embraced. somewhere a circle of hands will open to receive us. Eyes will light up as we enter. Voices will celebrate with us whenever we come into our own power. Sometimes it is a gift of grace, and we simply feel it unbidden, grateful for fellow travelers. Sometimes it is a gift that comes from our hanging in and learning and changing our previously hard hearts. However the gift comes, may we know it ever more clearly, ever more fully.